Our next case is 823-1819. I hope I pronounced this correctly. Khan versus the City of Minneapolis and Hennepin County. The city is 10, the county is 5, I think, but I'll ask.
Take care, have a good day.
As I indicated, our next case is Khan versus the City of Minneapolis and Hennepin County. It's my understanding that the respondents will be splitting their time. If you could, on the record, just identify, how much and who goes first, that would be helpful.
Your Honor, Greg Sauter for the City of Minneapolis. I will go first with 10 minutes, no more than, and then I will be followed by Mr. Huff for Hennepin County.
Great. And there was some question about whether you get to split rebuttal time, but as I'm sure you're aware, counsel, you don't get any rebuttal time because
Absolutely. You're
not the appellant. So we're not going to change the rules to give you some.
An oversight on our part. Our apologies.
I make mistakes all the time. That's why I'm a dumbass. So counsel for the appellant, as you'll have 15 minutes. They'll have 15 minutes shared, and then you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Whenever you're ready, sir, just approach the microphone and adjust the podium up and down, and please tell us who you are in a loud voice, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You're welcome.
May it please the court, my name is James Heiberg, attorney for appellant Mahmoud Khan. In late December of 2022, I learned that Thomas Deegan, a highly placed former Minneapolis city official, had offered to help Mr. Khan. Mr. Khan was being rendered financially destitute by the city, largely on the strength of annual VBR fees. This fee had increased from $300 in 2001 to at or just above $7,000 since the year 2011. Mr. Deegan has personal knowledge that the VBR fee is not calculated to cover the city's costs of administering to vacant buildings and is intended to punish targeted landlords. I was happy to hear that someone in the know was willing to tell the truth about the VBR fee, but I was wary of an administrative exhaustion requirement. After doing some research, I was pleased to find that there really is a path to justice in this case.
Before we get there, can we start? I guess I've been a little bit confused about, I just haven't been able to trace why these VBR fees are assessments. Could you explain to me sort of the legal analysis for how could you give me a little bit of background on how these VBR fees come under this particular statute?
Yeah, good question. I think it's, VBR fees have just been labeled an assessment, and that seems to be the way courts have been looking at them. So it falls under the same category,
Could
I guess.
Could you give me a case site where maybe this is just the way the city has indicated that they consider them to be assessments? I guess I just wasn't quite able to track how the VBR fees precisely fall under the assessment statute.
Right. Well, frankly, you've asked me a very good question. It seems to be something we've just been assuming.
If you don't have the answer precisely, that's fine as well.
Right. I don't have a case that construes or that explains that categorization not the tip of my fingers. This is an unusual case. Let's see this for what it is, a rare and important case that calls into question the veracity of city officials. This is a case that cries out for the employment of the judiciary's highest ideals, truth, honesty, fairness, and justice. According to Minnesota Statute Section 429.081, the statute used by defendants and the trial court to justify dismissal, a person who has been assessed by a municipality need not object at an administrative hearing if the person has reasonable cause for not appearing. Mr.
Khan, I'm just going to interrupt you to focus a little bit on how this is an administrative hearing under the statute. The statute contemplates judicial review and what occurs in the typical case is that someone makes a challenge to the district court. So it seems to me your analysis really hinges on this notion that somehow the statute contemplates administrative review, and I'm just not buying that. So maybe you could sell me on that a little bit.
Okay, sure. Well, let me get the text of the statute. See if I can locate it quickly here.
I mean, the statute uses the language may appeal to the district court, which just doesn't
Correct.
Sound like an administrative remedy.
It is. It's a statute that is strangely worded. The statute.
Under 429.061, isn't that where the administrative process happens, that you get the assessment, you have to go to this hearing? What's not clear to me is whether the council makes the final decision on the assessment prior to the hearing and you have to show up at the hearing to object, or if the final decision is made at the hearing, which would mean that would be the end of the administrative process. And my question about this case from the beginning has been, did your client ever object to these fees at the administrative level? As opposed to the appeal statute under 0.081, I think that 0.061 would indicate that if you have a problem with your fees, you need to object at the administrative level,
okay.
which is the 061 statute.
Okay, sure. Understood. The defendants and the court seem to have been relying on 429.081, but I think you're right. What this comes down to is whether Mr. Khan was required to go to an administrative hearing prior to filing in district
or file a written objection. I mean, the 061 would say that if you have an objection to the VBR fee, you either need to write to the council that you object and explain your reasons in writing, or you need to appear at the hearing and say, I object to this assessment. And then the council, after hearing your objection, makes a decision, yes or no. And that would be the actual administrative proceeding. And I think that that's where we get lost in this case, is that everyone is citing to 0.081, but in fact there's a step before that that an individual must take if they want to object to these VBR fees. Do you agree with that?
Well, I'll trust your reading of 0.061, and the reason why Mr. Khan can be excused from not having objected is because that would have been futile as well. You know, this objection, if I'm understanding what you said correctly, needs to be lodged with the administrative agency.
Well, here we're talking about the City Council,
which
is sitting as the okay. decision-making body.
Well, it would be futile to ask the City Council to rule that its own VBR fee, its own ordinance authorizing this VBR fee is unconstitutional. Seems to be the same set of circumstances as going to an administrative hearing officer who's not empowered to make to rule on constitutional issues.
This is what I don't quite understand, is that I think that this happens all the time in these city council, county board type of decisions. If I'm unhappy with a decision that the county board is making, I can show up at the hearing, I can say, I think that XYZ, that what you're doing is unconstitutional. The county board says, no, this is fine. And then I use the judicial review procedures that exist for reviewing county board decisions to tee that case up for the district court sitting as the appellate court or for the court of appeals, depending upon the structure of the statute, which, you know, this is one of the older statutes that you still have an appeal to the district court.
Actually, I think 429.081 is actually at least as important as 061 and maybe more, because what 081 does is it apparently refers back to 061. And it says if you have reasonable cause for not objecting, then you can go right to district court. And that's what point 429.081 seems to say to me. So, okay, you have a situation where 429.081 says if you have reasonable cause for not objecting, then you can go straight to district court, and that's what Mr. Khan did.
Haven't most of the cases interpreting reasonable cause had to do more with, did you get the required notice to know that you could go to this hearing? Did you get the required notice so that you could file your written objection to the fees? Hasn't that been, I mean, most of the cases that have interpreted what reasonable cause mean, hasn't that been the interpretation?
Well, there's been one case that I know of that is, maybe two, it's in my brief somewhere, but that interprets reasonable cause, and yes, that is failure to receive notice. Obviously, somebody who hasn't received notice can't attend or object. But the statute isn't written limiting it to failure to receive notice. It doesn't say if you haven't received notice, then you can go straight to district court. It says if you have reasonable cause for failing to object, then you can go to district court. If the legislature intended reasonable cause to consist only of lack of notice, it would have written that. But it uses this phrase reasonable cause to give the judiciary some room to do some justice.
But Mr. Heiberg, you would agree that had you appealed to the district court within the time frame, you could be making the very same constitutional arguments that you're now making to us. Would that be a fair statement?
Well, we do have to take into consideration the practical reality that Mr. Khan did not have any evidence until late December of 2022. You know, his only arguments that he's ever had against this VBR fee is that it is unconstitutional, that it's an excessive fine. It's a fee that acts like a fine. It's excessive.
Well, you know, he could have made those arguments even without the testimony of the individual you found, right? He could have testified, look at this, my God, you know, there's no basis to connect these fees to the problems of vacant properties. You could have hired your own expert, you know, who could have crunched the numbers. I mean, you could have done all that within the appropriate time frame, right? Even without this individual who, you know, apparently is saying all these things as a former city employee.
Okay, but as a practical matter, it's been done. Without inside information, the whistleblowing testimony, we've done this. We brought it to court and said, look at what San Francisco charges. Look at the difference is dramatic. And it is the same fee. And we've been turned back time and again. So, you know, this testimony appears, and I'm supposed to just ignore it and say, no, there's no chance that a court is going to say, you know what, in the interest of justice, we're going to say that that this is bringing this to the city council would have been futile, and also administrative agency hearing officers aren't empowered to decide constitutional questions. And I suppose, sure, he could have gone there and made the arguments, but then and then brought them to district court. Only to find again that the court needs more evidence. So we finally get the evidence. We've got an insider who's ready to testify. Can't be blamed for trying, for filing this case. This evidence just finally landed in our lap. We now have what it takes to actually succeed in court. I mean, when you've tried that before, the VBR fee going and saying this is unfair, this is clearly an excessive fine, and you get turned back time and again for lack of evidence, that's, as a practical matter, that really starts to seem futile. So that's why I can't help that Mr. Deegan didn't step forward until late 2022, after the time period for objecting to the city council had passed. You know, I do want to refer back to where I left off. This is a case that cries out for employment of very high ideals. You know, I think the question is, do these statutes require an assessed person to utilize an administrative hearing or object to a city council if that hearing or objection would be futile? You know, and this wouldn't constitute end of the world, end around on the usual requirement of administrative exhaustion or 0.061. Other assessed parties can try it, but if they don't have evidence to back up their claims, they won't get very far, and we do. I think this is important evidence that shouldn't be ignored based on statutes that seem to be unconstitutional as applied. I think a little background is appropriate here. Around 2016, the city began an effort to deprive Mr. Khan of 43 valid rental dwelling licenses. The city succeeded in 2017 and proceeded to evict 350 poor people from their truly affordable homes. The city then proceeded to fine Mr. Khan into oblivion with VBR fees because his properties were vacant. This might be tolerable if the VBR fee simply covered the city's costs, but it doesn't. It's a fee that acts like a fine, it's intended to punish, it's excessive, and it's unconstitutional. It's time for the judiciary to put a stop to the destruction of Mr. Khan. He's the nicest, most considerate person you could ever want to meet, and he fixed things in his properties. That is why his rental licenses were valid, inspected, and improved year after year. He did not deserve any of this. The amount of property and money that the city has taken from Mr. Khan shocks the conscience. There should be a limit to the amount of deprivation a city can visit on one person. Mr. Khan doesn't deserve to have every last cent he has taken from him, and that's especially true where the amount is unconstitutional.
Just last Council, week... Council, we have given you a little bit, and we are familiar with the facts, and we have given you a little bit more time, and you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
So. Okay. Thank you,
Your Honor. Thank you. We'll now hear for counsel for the city, please.
May it please the court, I am Assistant City Attorney Gregory Sauter. To answer Judge Larson's initial question about 061 and the other parts of the statute, this case was brought. We are still at the motion dismiss stage. There has been no sussing out, nor are there any allegations on whether or not Mr. Khan objected to or didn't object to the assessments when made. And so there's no facts in the record about whether or not he objected. And for that reason, the City of Minneapolis, in its motion to dismiss, focused on 429.081's 30-day appeal requirement. Assuming
you admit that that's an appeal requirement. I mean, you indicate in your brief that you think that this is a district court process, but you admit that this is an appeal of a council action. So this is more like a lot of these older city statutes that predate the Court of Appeals, where the city council makes the decision and then you get an appeal to the district court, and the district court is sitting more as an appellate court than they are sitting as a district court with general jurisdiction. I mean, you don't disagree with that.
Not entirely, Your Honor. It actually gets a little messier with the City of Minneapolis, because the City of Minneapolis has its own special law, which I'm not going to quote here, but it's within the briefing, which gives it the authority to assess these. And then, pursuant to that special law, it has Minneapolis Code of Ordinances, I think it's 227.100, and under that, creates the process in which the special assessment is done. And
that includes VBR fees?
VBR specific 249.80 says it shall be assessed pursuant to 227.100. 227.100 is the nuisance statute. And then within that, I have not read it recently for this fact, whether it requires whether it requires somebody object prior to assessment in order to have an assessment. I forget whether it has that or not in that, Your Honor, but I would defer to the...
Well, my question is, I mean, in your motion to dismiss, you're relying on the assessment statute, and so it would seem relevant whether or not this is an assessment that falls underneath this statute.
It is the city's position that it does fall under 249.80. If one goes back to the Meldahl case that this court ruled on, I believe it was 2013, 2014, that was a consolidated assessment appeal for a similar landlord who had multiple properties, including making constitutional challenges. And that actually provides the entire process that Your Honor was asking about also, about how the city uses hearing officers and whatnot in the case. And the
So just to go back to the question, the initial question that Judge Larson had of your opposing counsel, how does a VBR become an assessment? Does it become an assessment when it's not paid?
It becomes an assessment when you're not, yes, Your Honor, it becomes an assessment when you're not paid, and the authority to do so is both, I may be mistaken, both under the special law, but also under 429.101. There is explicit language under Minnesota statutes allowing VBRs to be assessed.
So is it sort of the same, like, the sidewalk in front of your house is cracked, and they send you a notice saying the sidewalk in your house is cracked, fix it, and you don't. And then, you're assessed for the cost of fixing it. Is it sort of like that?
Yes, Your Honor. It's one of those special fees that's listed within 429.101. There's five or six of them. I believe there's some sidewalk ice cleanup. There's some, not the street. We're not St. Paul here, Your Honor. But there is also the VBR listed within there. But when it comes down to...
So then you get an assessment and then you do have the opportunity under 061 to object?
Yes.
Okay. So it would get converted in, so the VBR gets converted into an assessment, you get a notice of the assessment, then you would have an obligation to either do your written objection or show up at the hearing to object, then the city council makes their final decision at that point with regard to the assessment? Or does the final decision happen when you get the notice and then you can object and that's sort of your opportunity to be heard?
So the city of Minneapolis uses a hearing officer system where
okay.
somebody makes a written objection, but they can also appear and verbally object. Hearing officer rules.
Okay.
The levy that's presented to council is never more than what the hearing officer agrees on. And so if a hearing officer reduces an assessment from $10,000 to $5,000, then the city council gets that. But the aggrieved party can still object to the city council. Then that decision to...
So there's another layer in, is
yes,
what you're
Your
saying. So you're saying in Minneapolis there's sort of two, you get the hearing officer and then you also could object in front of the council.
Yes, Your Honor, but not physically. One can submit a letter.
Yeah.
And that's provided as part of the record. And then that is the legislative act which
429.081
allows for a judicial appeal. And that's the very essence of the city's subject matter argument, is Mr. Kahn, there's no allegations that Mr. Kahn wasn't provided notice. There's no allegations that the process that happened before city council action on any of these assessments somehow was wrong. The allegations are that this assessment was adopted and he suffered damage because of it. And that's the very thing that 429.081 is meant to allow for a speedy...
The argument that, I didn't know about Mr. Deegan until it was too late. Is that just tough?
Your Honor, the Supreme Court in the Sievert matter, which is extensively briefed, didn't discuss that very issue, but ruled on that issue. Which is, in the Sievert case, they were looking at a new change to 081, which still exists today, and they said no, where there was one exception for appealing an assessment that the Supreme Court had recognized. And then the legislature stepped in and said, no, all objections to the assessment shall be waived unless presented on such an appeal. And then Sievert ruled that on that appeal, regardless of the justice of it, needs, you, one has a 30 days in order to do that remedy, to seek a remedy. And in that case, Siebert wasn't dealing with constitutional issues. But if one looks at the Buettner case.
Well, and Siebert also wasn't dealing with sort of this other side law of futility, was it? I mean, because I think you agree, right? Like, there's sort of this offshoot of administrative law, which is these futility cases, which is there are some compelling circumstances where using the administrative procedure would somehow prevent you from being able to really bring the claim that you want to bring. And I'm not, whether that applies to this statute or not, Siebert didn't really address that question, did it?
No, Your Honor, it didn't. Okay. And it didn't need to. Because in this case, we don't have an administrative process. We have a judicial process, which Mr. Khan did not follow. He had an opportunity.
I mean, it's an administrative process, though. I mean, to get to the district court, in order to get, the district court is sitting as an appellate court in these circumstances. It's not sitting as a district court of general jurisdiction. So this isn't a court process. This is more akin to, like a drainage proceeding where the county sits as the drainage authority and then they make the decision on the drainage case and then you can appeal to the district court. And then if you disagree with what the district court said, then you appeal to our court. But the district court is fundamentally sitting as an appellate court, not as a court of general jurisdiction, which is precisely why it can't hear this case, is because its proper role is to be in an appellate role, not in a district court role when it's hearing those cases.
Judge Larson, I do need to disagree with you on that, on one fundamental premise.
Okay.
And that is, like in Buettner, those courts, once they pass the presumption, the courts make a de novo review of what, a de novo determination of whether or not the special benefit is met.
Do they reopen the record?
They create a new record with most special benefit appeals have competing experts about what the special benefit is. And that is a takings proceeding. And that is a constitutional proceeding. And then I believe it's Siebert, it might be Buettner, and I apologize for this, but one of the cases there, not Siebert, Buettner, is that the courts, when it comes to constitutional matters and constitutional challenges, they don't necessarily apply that presumption. And at that point, they're sitting de novo. So it's not entirely, and a record gets developed and it goes before the court. I see my time is running out, so unless there's any further questions.
I don't think so. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll now hear from counsel for the other respondent.
You did promise you wouldn't go over 10 minutes, so.
Hennepin County, thank you. Can you just tell us who you are, please, sir?
May it please the court and counsel, my name is Matthew Huff, and I'm an assistant county attorney representing respondent Hennepin County. The issue before this court on appeal is whether the district court properly granted respondents' motion to dismiss. The district court properly granted the motion to dismiss after relying on the plain language of 429.081 and Siebert versus City of Wakefield. Now, I noticed one of the areas that the panel had questions about was how the city's involved in the assessments in this process, and so I think that I just wanted to touch on kind of the county's involvement as well, to the extent that that is helpful to the panel. And so essentially the county becomes involved, and this is all under 429.061, once VBR fees are unpaid. And so what happens is the city certifies to the county auditor that the special assessment has been unpaid, and then at that point the county collects those special assessments as part of the taxes that are owed and due to the county.
So the assessment would show up on the county property tax statement?
That's correct. Okay. And I guess the other point that I want to make about this is not discretionary on the county's part, so this is all outlined under 429, but so the county just, once they've been certified by the city, the county has no discretion about collecting those or not.
And then when you collect it, do you then, like, turn it over to the city?
That's also outlined in statute, and it goes to different pots, so like the state, county, and municipalities. It all gets split up, essentially.
So you get a piece of it?
That's correct, yes.
Not him personally.
Well, no. Well, I guess I am a public employee.
So that's why you're here, because the county wants its cut. I get it. There you go.
One of the other cases I wanted to talk about that hasn't been discussed yet, and this was in the county's brief, is Bauk v. City of Pine Island. And I think I realize it's not precedential, and the facts are certainly a little bit different from this case, but I think there is some analysis in there that's instructive for this court. And so in Bauk, that involved essentially a jurisdiction issue, as well as 429.081, where the landowner didn't comply with the service requirements. And so basically the City of Pine Island brought a motion to dismiss, and the court granted it by looking at 429.081. But on appeal, the landowner raised an argument essentially saying that they didn't have to comply with 429.081 because they were raising this, I guess I'll categorize it as a freestanding constitutional claim, right? And I think that's kind of akin to what's happening in this case. And basically the court looked at that and said, no, you know, 429.081 has been interpreted by Seifert, and that's not allowed because they didn't comply with the requirements of the statute. The next point that I just wanted to briefly touch on is, so appellants also arguing that the reasonable cause exception applies in this case. The first thing I wanted to point out for the court is that was not argued at the district court level. It was not decided by the district court. And so in the county's view, that issue has been waived on appeal. But even if it has not, I think that Judge Larson kind of touched on this. It seems that the reasonable cause exception has been interpreted to look more towards due process considerations, and the record in this case doesn't have any indication that appellant did not receive notice and did not know about appearing for the hearing that was scheduled. And so I guess that's kind of where I would leave that, unless the panel has questions.
I don't think we do. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Counsel for the appellant, you'll have the last word, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You're welcome.
I don't think it's in case law that a court has said that reasonable cause is limited to due process issues. Reasonable cause is just that, reasonable cause. Do you have good reason to not attend the administrative or engage in the administrative process? This is very important. Mr. Khan just received another VBR fee for over $7,000. The notice for that fee says that you can appeal and you have to call this phone number. It's the 673-3000 number. It's the general 311 phone number for the City of Minneapolis. There's no mention of, first you have to go to the City Council and you have to bring all of your arguments to them. And then you go to 429.081 if you've gone to the City Council first. That's nowhere in this notice. So we have a factual problem here, and this needs...
But I think this comes to a question that I have, which is, well, it seems like these VBR fees happen every year, so what's preventing your client, instead of bringing this separate proceeding, when the next round of VBR fees are imposed, why couldn't your client just use this process, since it seems like these are annual fees? So this is recurring every year. And so in terms of thinking about futility or reasonable cause, why wouldn't it be more appropriate for your client to use this procedure since this is happening every year?
Well, yes. Once we got enough evidence to support the claims, then, the wheels started to turn. But until then, it was just, and this notice is now and always has been simply call this number and schedule a hearing with the hearing officer. You know, and if there's a 429.061 requirement that an assessed party needs to first object to the City Council, the City of Minneapolis hasn't been giving notice of that. All right, so, you know, we need to kick this back, at the very least, kick this back to the trial court to hash some of these things out so that we can find out, well, what kind of notice is the city giving? You know, that seems to be a fatal flaw. It's taken everybody by surprise. Oh, you have to go to the city. 061 requires you to object to the city council. Well, it's not in the notice. So we have no notice, right, of what's required in order to bring your case in district court.
Did you plead that, though?
Yeah, you know, the pleadings, okay, as far as that goes, this stuff about new arguments and new issues, factors favoring review include the issue is a novel legal issue of first impression, the issue was raised prominently in briefing, the issue was implicit in or akin to the arguments below, and the issue is not dependent on any new or controverted facts. So, you know, this argument that, well, this wasn't presented below, of course it was. I've talked about 429.081 and tied it to futility throughout. That language is from Watson v. United Services Auto Association, 566 Northwest 2nd, 683, Minnesota, 1997. I respectfully request that the court not kill this case. It does not deserve to die. This is, Mr. Kahn has been, I'll stop moralizing, but I do think that there is a serious issue here when it comes to notice. And if due process is, if reasonable cause for not engaging in the statute, what seems to be a statutory requirement, if that's limited to due process, then we have that problem here. That's all I have.
Thank you very much, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We thank the advocates for their briefs and their advocacy very much. We'll be issuing our decision in 90 days. Thank you.